really well.
Find out weekdays from noon to 3 right here on The Roar, where every day is game day.
All right, hour number 2 out of bounds. William Quackenbush, Ben Milstead with you. Thanks for joining us here on the program. This hour brought to you by our friends Greg and Julie Terry, Collegiate Legacy Designs, collegiatelegacydesigns.com. Go there and see the designs. If you've got a Clemson ring, you know the design. It's just a Clemson ring. They've got the men's and the women's ring. They've got the Citadel rings, and they've got Texas A&M rings. These are iconic representations of just a pivotal time in your life. And the Clemson ring is recognizable in airports. The Citadel ring and Texas A&M ring the same. And they're going to give that to you in plaque form. These are beautiful pieces. I got one as a gift for Christmas this year, and it is phenomenal. Highly encourage you to check out collegiatelegacydesigns.com. Put that in your office, in your home, collegiatelegacydesigns.com. Before we get to basketball, I do want to say this, like, I keep coming back to the thing that I have said multiple times the last week and a half, that for Dabo Swinney, it is not as clear as we all, I'm going to put us all in the same camp here, as we all think it is, that they need to just heavily portal because they're not getting it done. Dabo Swinney needs to do the accounting. We continue to hear names coming into the transfer portal. Caden Story, Stephylin Green, Marcus Dixon, Josh Sapp. I mean, these are all sort of later, like the last couple days, names that have sort of entered the transfer portal there. And names that are coming off the 105 and money that's coming off the books. These are numbers that Dabo Swinney might need to leave in order to bring in portal players. And particularly from a money standpoint, Clemson's not wanting for cash here. But any little bit extra you have to sweeten the pot from guys that aren't playing is good. That's a quality thing. We'll continue to update that. Have you been surprised at all by any of the portal names or activity that we've seen? What is it, about a dozen right now leaving Clemson at the moment?
I have not. Maybe, I don't know, Stephylin Green, a little bit of a surprise. But I also would not rule out that Clemson's okay with him leaving. Because, you know, Tom Allen, again, talking about getting his kind of guy, his kind of player in there. I don't know if he is or is not his kind of player. I know that other people did. I was told there were other teams made a run at Green last year. And he was entertaining the thought then. So not even really surprised by that.
This is something that I feel very strongly, okay? If you are somebody that thinks that the culture of the program isn't quite as strong as maybe some would believe, if you're a little bit down on it, then watching players who are the product of that culture walk out the door is not the worst thing in the world. Stephylin Green was going to be a starter at Clemson. He's probably going to be a starter somewhere else. But I just don't, based on the conversations and based on the results, I just don't think there's a whole lot worth preserving at all cost to what we saw on the field this year.
In terms of whether you're disappointed or not, is it not hard to answer that because you don't know what the replacement is yet?
Yeah, that's right. That's right. It is very similar, and I keep going back to this, but it's very similar to the Dell Jones and Chauncey Wiggins defections from men's basketball this year. There were lots of folks that were not sad to see Chauncey Wiggins go, but it was important that they put back the production. They did. Clemson did not get worse when Chauncey Wiggins left. Clemson did not get worse when Dell Jones left. It doesn't have to be a negative. Even if you're very, like, bullish. Like, the people are not bullish on Chauncey Wiggins, but people were bullish on Dell Jones. And, boy, that's a piece of your future. Well, it doesn't have to be a detraction. The subtraction doesn't have to be a detraction. It doesn't have to make you worse in the short term or the long term if you just get the portal and the recruiting stuff right. And it appears that Clemson men's basketball has gotten the portal and the recruiting stuff right. The same can be said for baseball. You don't have to miss your portal players as long as you put back the same or better. And in some ways, a better player might just be a better value for the same production, because that allows you to get a better player in some other spot. And so we'll see what Clemson does in the portal. But again, everybody that leaves is another reason that Clemson needs to go outside the program and outside of traditional high school recruiting to be able to fill his needs. So we're not done seeing the names. I can promise you that. There's going to be more names. The portal's just open. The flood, I've been refreshing the portal page probably every 15 minutes this morning, and there are the On3 transfer portal page, there are at least a dozen names added every time I refresh that page.
This, I said on Twitter, today sort of has replaced National Signing Day, has it not?
Yeah, kind of. I mean, I agree with that. By the way, I just saw this. I was looking at On3, and they have a report that Andy Kotelnicki, who's a name that we brought up at Clemson, going back to Kansas to be the associate head coach. So that was Penn State's offensive coordinator. We talked about he would be a good fit because of what he does in the run game in particular and what he might do with some mobility at quarterback. But he is back at Kansas, where he had great success as the offensive coordinator for 3 years for Lance Leopold. Do you want to talk a little basketball? I want to talk some hoops today too, and we'll get to the phones as well and read some texts. You were in Syracuse on New Year's Eve. The Tigers get a win, 64-61, in a game that I felt Clemson was better, but they were never better enough that you didn't stop being worried. At least that was me. I never was not worried about the result, even though Clemson had a nice working margin for a large portion of the game. What were your main takeaways courtside at the JMA Wireless Dome?
First, I was just happy to be there. In case you missed it.
Holy Lord.
Syracuse had 19 inches of snow on the 30th. Which was a record for a day in December, a record in Syracuse. And we landed in the middle of that stuff. I wanted to hug the pilots when we landed.
Every video from the landing, including the stuff you sent me, it looks like somebody's going on an Arctic expedition in a movie.
I've been on lots and lots and lots of flights. Rarely do I get nervous. I was nervous. I reached down and tightened the old seatbelt. So there's that. It's nice to go to Syracuse and walk in and feel like you not only have a chance to win, you should win. And that's the way I felt. I did hear someone characterize Syracuse's starting lineup as not very good today. I disagree with that. I think they have some very good individual players. I just don't think they're a very good team. And there were elements of their game I just didn't think they were coached very well, if I'm being honest.
Well, and let's be clear about this, too. Their most productive player was coming off an injury. He played 28 minutes as the sixth man off the bench.
Yeah, and you're talking about Donnie Freeman. He scores 18 points in the second half. And that kid's very good. Nate George that beat you at he was the Georgia Tech transfer, is on that roster. Carmelo Anthony's son, he's okay. I mean, he's going to be better.
He's going to be really good, yeah.
J.J. Starling is a good player that didn't do anything in this game.
I tell you what, Clemson guarded him very well.
Yeah, so, I mean, to characterize them as not a very good starting five, I just disagree with that. But Clemson was a better team than Syracuse. And I thought it was very important that they never let Syracuse get more than a one-point lead. On the possession after Syracuse took a lead, Clemson stopped them every single time. And their defense was extraordinary in those times. And then when you get to end a game with inbounds plays and things like that, Brad was just in his bag, to use the kids' term. And Dick Bender actually designs a lot of those plays, and they were just very good at designed plays out of a timeout or a dead ball. I just thought they were really good. Dylan Hunter hit two clutch threes there at the end. And, you know, in a team like Syracuse that blocks so many shots, they still managed to allow Clemson to get behind them at the basket time after time. And that was the part that I was like, is it possible that a team can be that good at blocking shots but not have a rim protector? That feels like that doesn't work together, but that's the way it felt to me.
You know, the one thing I was worried about with this matchup was looking at Syracuse's shot blocking numbers and then saying, okay, Clemson's going to have to shoot it well in this building that notoriously is very difficult to shoot in. But what Brad Brownell showed early in the game, and you mentioned it, the ATO stuff after timeouts, I said the exact same thing. Faxon and I actually talked about it on the plane. We talked about it on the plane flying up to Virginia, that Brad Brownell, every single media timeout, every single break any action, there was the next play Clemson ran was something absolutely beautiful mm-hmm. that got them a wide open look. And they scored. Now, if you miss a shot, it doesn't matter, but they were scoring them. The thing that I liked about the initial game plan is that somehow, and this is film study, they do a great job of film study and scouting, that Clemson found that Syracuse likes to block guards, driving guards, and they get help side blocks. But what they did is they put Syracuse's shot blockers in one-on-one back-to-the-basket defense.
Good point. They did.
Post-entry early in the game, and not just inside out, but it was post-entry, and those guys are scoring. Davidson, Welling, Godfrey, even Wallin a couple of times mid-post, back to the basket. They were making Syracuse's shot blockers guard one-on-one on the ball without help side because they'd clear it out. And if you're going to help, you're going to leave a wide-open shooter. And that, to me, is why Clemson started getting points in the paint, is because they weren't driving it so that a shot blocker could come off of a help side position and swat a ball, or, you know, a longer wing can swat a shot from behind or whatever. Making those guys guard, they weren't that strong. Like, R.J. Godfrey showed that Syracuse has some long athletes that aren't that strong because he was able to muscle them out of the way. Welling got the ball to the rim when he wanted and missed a couple. Davidson was able to work around a bit. I love that part of the game plan because I didn't expect it. And I didn't expect Clemson to be that persistent at it or effective doing it, especially early in the game.
A couple of texters talking about the officiating in the game. On that, they did lose one official to injury for the, I want to say the majority of the game he was gone.
What happened there?
I don't know. I think it was maybe a hamstring, and I really don't know. He went to the Syracuse locker room, and then he came back out on the floor one time, and then all of a sudden he was gone again. So I guess he just couldn't go. That was one of the more physical games I've seen in a while. But at least the officials were consistent for the most part. They did not change the way that they called the second half from the first half, and it's always been my pet peeve about ACC officiating. So I do think they were at least consistent in that way. They missed some bad calls, but they also missed some calls against Clemson. There was one travel in particular at a key point that, I mean, we absolutely got away with a travel in the lane.
All right, people are bringing up the five-second call.
Okay. I'll preface this by saying it's a little nitpicky at that juncture of the game. That point in the game, it's a little nitpicky. However, I think the refs got it right because he set the ball down. I don't recall if he started the arm movement counting or not. In fact, I don't think he did because I try to pay attention to that stuff. But then Buddy Johnson is the inbounder, and he leans over the ball and he puts both hands on either side of the ball like he's going to pick it up, but never does. And he's looking around, and the whole time, like, if he would not have done that, if he's just still standing and looking around, I'm not sure that they call it that quick. But because he did that, he was making it obvious that he was stalling.
Right.
And again, that point in the game, I'm not sure that that ever gets called. But at the same time, I'm not sure the official got it wrong either.
It's sort of, and I don't know what the rule is, the way it actuates is that it's sort of at the official's discretion. Like, there are a lot of times that the official could start the count and they just choose not to. I had an all caps text from a mutual friend of ours when we landed in Charlottesville that said, he counted to three before the ball was possessed. I mean, like, it was like the long all caps, like, I can't believe that just happened. And so I had to go back and watch. And I'll admit, like, unless, and we don't know if Clemson had been warned about it before. That's honestly, it's the kind of thing that if an official had told you like five times, maybe you would do it. If it hadn't been a problem, it's the kind of thing that would catch you off guard because of how many times it might have happened.
I don't think it had
in other
happened.
Games. Okay.
I don't think it had happened. Not that I remember.
Before we go to break, let's go to Tennessee Tiger. We'll squeeze him in real quick here. What's up, Tennessee Tiger?
Happy New Year, guys.
Happy New Year to you.
It's a new year, so my call ban is over.
The clock restarts for everybody.
Well, I'm just saying, you know, I checked the Nielsen ratings and the Arbitron ratings after that. You know, I just mentioned something out of the blue. Anyway, before I mention anything about sports, did y'all see the video of the hockey game last Saturday at the is it the USB Arena now with the two hockey teams in New York, where the national anthem was played by the 104-year-old Army veteran?
I did see that. That was awesome.
I know. I called Walt last Friday. He didn't know about it. And also, Lane Kiffin's grocery shopping has now gone viral on the national news. Did you see that?
I did not see that.
Well, he came home, and he was carrying everything under his arms and his hands. It was in his house. I don't know how they – anyway, somebody shut it out. And, you know, and they were saying, well, why didn't you – so why are you carrying that? You know, why don't you put it in the bags? And he said with his $90 million or however much money he makes, he said – he said, well, they buy the groceries and they make you pay for a shopping, you know, for a bag. Anyway, that's what he said.
Interesting.
So I don't think you get a tip out of him. But getting to Coach Sweeney, when you were talking about, you know, on the press conferences, you know, he's talking about the past. And I thought about, well, yeah, that's true, you know, what you said. But, you know, we used to get from Coach Bowden, well, if I told you, I'd have to kill you. Or maybe his other option would be like Marshawn Lynch when he said, they told me I had to talk, so that's why I'm here. Remember
oh, yeah,
that?
I'm here so I won't get fined. That's right.
Yeah. The past couple of weeks since the coaching issue came up and people were texting and are calling about, well, you know, Dabo's, you know, it says in the Bible, you know, pride goes before a fall, you know. And I called one show and said, well, that's not the complete verse on that. It says pride goes before destruction, and Dabo is not stubborn, if that's what you're saying. That's not what the verse says. It's just a haughty spirit. But maybe the other verse you might should be using is, don't let the left hand know what your right hand's doing. So just as a circle of people there that I don't know about, y'all got contacts, I don't know, that, you know, Dabo's going to work this out. I mean, that's the way I look at it.
Yeah, hey, Tennessee Tiger, we're up against it. I appreciate the phone call. Thanks very much. Good stuff there. All right, let's take a break. When we come back, we got more to say. We got some text rolling in. We'll get to them. 654-ROAR is the number. Hour 2 continues after this.
Looking for expert tree care in the upstate? Call Franklin Tree Service, your trusted partner for quality tree work and more. Whether it's tree removal, trimming, stump grinding, or storm damage cleanup, Franklin Tree Service has you covered. Their certified team is committed to making your yard safe and beautiful. And as a proud longtime partner of the Roar, you know Franklin Tree Service is a name you can trust in the upstate. Affordable, reliable, and fully insured. Call Franklin Tree Service today at 864-947-9065.
Poor indoor air quality can significantly decrease your quality of life through experiencing sinus infections, allergies, respiratory issues, and headaches. An easy-to-install device called UV PhotoMax uses purifying blue light to zap bacteria, mold, and viruses before they enter your home's air vents. Purify the air your family breathes and help protect them from mold, bacteria, and viruses with the UV PhotoMax from Estes Heating and Air. Serving Oconee, Pickens, Greenville, and surrounding areas. Visit ESHeatingAir.com today for more information.
Is your crawl space damp or musty? Water in your crawl space can cause wood to rot and create an environment for mold and mildew that can make its way inside your home. Canty Foundation Specialist specializes in crawl space repair. Call us today for your free inspection so you can have the peace of mind knowing your crawl space is dry and your home is protected. Call today, 864-641-0176, or visit cantycanfixit.com.
When your motors stop, your production does too. That's why companies like EMCOR rely on Industrial Motor Service.
Excellent customer service and highly knowledgeable staff. Taylor and the team are extremely quick to respond with solutions. I highly recommend Industrial Motor Service for all your motor needs.
When your business depends on reliable motors and fast repairs, count on the team trusted by industry pros for decades, Industrial Motor Service. Visit industrialmotorservice.com to learn more. Industrial Motor Service, keeping your business moving.
East Main Furniture in Easley, where every day is a sale day. Come find deals on living room, bedroom, dining room, lamps, rugs, mattresses, and occasional furniture. Brand names like Lazy Boy, England Best, Ashley, Catnapper, Liberty Furniture, and Vaughn Bassett, all at discounted prices. If we don't stock it, we can special order it for you. With 90 days same as cash on purchases over $300, we make it easy. East Main Furniture, located at 829 East Main Street, Easley, or call 864-442-6000. Today.
Turn on the fun and see where the light takes you. Cash Pop from the South Carolina Education Lottery is easy to play with tons of chances to win. Pick a number from 1 to 15 and you could win up to $2,500, or play all 15 numbers and you're guaranteed to win. So let the good times glow with Cash Pop, the light of the party. Get more details at sceducationlottery.com.
Guys, thanks for helping me carry my Christmas tree.
Zoe, this thing weighs a ton.
Drewski, lift with your legs, man.
Santa, did you get my letter?
He's talking to you, Bridges.
I'm not that.
Of course he did, right, Santa?
You know, my elf Drewski here, he handles the nice list.
An elf? I'm 6'3". What everyone wants is iPhone 17. And at T-Mobile, you can get it on them. That center stage front camera is amazing for group selfies. Right, Mrs. Claus?
I'm Mrs. Claus's much younger sister. And at T-Mobile, there's no trade-in needed when you switch. So you can keep your old phone.
Or give it as a gift.
And the best part? You can make the switch to T-Mobile from your phone in just 15 minutes.
Guys, my side of the tree is slipping.
Timber!
The holidays are better at T-Mobile. Switch in just 15 minutes and get iPhone 17 on us with no trade-in needed.
With 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers plus tax and $35 device connection charge. Credits end and balance due if you pay off earlier. Cancel. Finance agreement, 256 gigs, $830. Eligible port in a new line, $100 plus a month plan with auto pay plus taxes and fees required. Check out in 15 minutes or less per line. Visit T-Mobile.com.
Broadcasting live from the Upcountry Fiber Studios, this is 105.5 and 97.5 The Roar. Upcountry Fiber is a stronger connection.
The Roar, with enough hot takes to melt your smart speaker. We are The Roar, where every day is game day.
All right, hour two continues out of bounds. William Quackenbush, Ben Milstead with you. Thanks for joining us here on the program. 654 Roar is the number if you'd like to join us on the phones or on the Adams Corby text line. 654-7627 is the number if you want to get in on all the fun today. We talked college football playoff. We've talked some Clemson football, certainly offensive coordinator search, and we've also talked some Clemson basketball. Worth noting, Clemson men's basketball is back in action, very excitedly so, at noon tomorrow as they take on Pittsburgh. So fly up to Syracuse, get a dub, come on back, fly up to Pittsburgh, hopefully get a dub against a worse team. Pittsburgh's just objectively worse than Syracuse. There's no question about that. Pittsburgh has had a kind of a miserable non-conference. They've lost 7 games already this year. They're sitting at 7-7. One of those is a loss at Miami on Tuesday, so they have had to travel as well this week. They have beaten Ohio State. They have beaten Penn State on a neutral floor. They have also lost a home game to Hofstra and Quinnipiac. So there are some losses, like at West Virginia. They got destroyed at West Virginia. But bottom line, they're playing real slow for Jeff Capel this year, real, real slow. And so Clemson is going to be very comfortable in that sort of a game. I would be sort of surprised. The way Clemson has played, I would be sort of surprised if they don't eventually get a fairly comfy margin against Pittsburgh. KenPom has them like winning by 3, and I think Bart Torvik has them winning by like 4 or 5. And again, I would be a little bit surprised if it's not at least that or more. Looking at some of the net stuff again, it's never too early to be talking net ratings. Clemson right now sitting at 37 in the net with 1 quad 1 win. Tomorrow's game at Pittsburgh is a quad 2. Clemson's 3-1 in quad 2. No bad losses. The worst loss they have is Georgetown, that it is just barely above the threshold into quad 2 territory. And so that's going to be something to monitor through the season as Georgetown sort of goes up and down. That could end up being a quad 3 loss. The hope there would be that Georgetown is a quad 2 loss over the course of time, and that Clemson's able to sort of keep it there. I believe the threshold is 135, if I remember correctly. And that certainly is something that you want for Georgetown. They had an injury to one of the bigs that really set them back. They had a couple just atrocious showings that sort of right after they played Clemson, to be honest with you. And so Clemson-Pittsburgh tomorrow, again, not a game that is going to be awesome for you. In fact, the Syracuse game, let me see, Syracuse sitting at 89 in the net, Pittsburgh sitting at 112. So, again, pretty decidedly quad 2 results at Syracuse and at Pittsburgh the next couple of days. So that's, you need to win those. That's big-time stuff for the Tigers right there. Let me say a couple things about the let me get to a couple texts. Clemson Carl gets in and says, "Quote, Clemson Carl here. Great to hear from you, Carl. I'm very good with Chad coming back. I feel better about the quarterback room than some fans. Plus, I think Chad can recruit and fix that room." Here's where I sit on Clemson's quarterback room. Okay, and I've said this before, but again, people listen different times, so I'll try to spend a little time on this. I believe that in the past, for the most part, doing what Clemson is doing at quarterback appears quite normal. You recruit guys, you develop them, you prepare them, and then when you have an opening, you've gotten the next guy close enough. And then he's going to get all the number one reps, or maybe you have a competition where you split the number one reps in the spring. And so you have that spring sample size to be able to get guys ready. And then they're going to have off-season workouts, and that's where you sort of distinguish yourself from some of the leadership stuff. You're seeing that. Who's spending extra time with the receivers? Who's doing some of the little things? Who is the locker room gravitating toward if you're going to have a competition? Or if you're going to promote a guy, you spend the offseason trying to spur that guy on to do some of those things, okay? Nothing wrong with this. In fact, you could look at two of the teams in particular playing yesterday, and two of the teams playing this weekend as examples of exactly what we're talking about. Julian Sain was a transfer, but I think he's a specific kind of transfer where he was a five-star guy that transferred from Alabama to Ohio State before he ever played a snap at Alabama. He basically was a, for all intents and purposes, he basically was a homegrown Ohio State player. I know he falls under the transfer camp because he signed with Alabama, but they all of the development, virtually all the development that he has is Ohio State development. So I would count him in that category. And then I would count Ty Simpson in that category too. And there was criticism last offseason of Kalen DeBoer losing Jalen Milroe, and everyone thought they're going to go to the portal and get a quarterback because Ty Simpson ain't it. I do think it is worth mentioning, not that it's going to work every time, but that Kalen DeBoer looked at his quarterback room and said, we can get a quarterback out of this. And Ty Simpson came along, and Alabama, if they have mediocre quarterback play for the entire year, Alabama does not make the college football playoff. In fact, they had mediocre quarterback play yesterday, and they lost by 5 touchdowns. Ty Simpson played well enough for enough of the year that he was able, with nobody from the outside pushing him. He was the oldest guy in the room. He was inherited by the previous staff. He sort of like won a competition that involved no transfer quarterbacks. Now, you could argue that the clay of the quarterbacks in Alabama's quarterback room is better than the clay in Clemson's quarterback room, and you would be correct about that. We saw Austin Mack yesterday. They've got the freshman kid that's a dynamite, 5-star kid too, that's behind both those guys. Mack was committed to DeBoer at Washington. And then like Keelan Russell is the other guy, the freshman, that's just that's supremely talented. But Simpson was able to win that job. The difference between Alabama and Clemson is the rest of the roster, in my opinion. The rest of Alabama's roster was able to sort of handle a quarterback transition that was kind of going to be slower than if you just plugged a Fernando Mendoza in, for example, and let him go. That's, I think, the rub with Clemson. I don't think Clemson's strategy is a strategy that never works in 2025, 2026 in any way, shape, and form. But I think it's hard to see it working in this particular circumstance if you don't go get somebody. Now, to Ben's point, I don't know why people are acting like not going to the portal for a quarterback is a fireable offense in and of itself. I think the way you put that was good. Like hiring Chad Morris is a fireable offense in and of itself. If the offense isn't very good and Clemson goes 7-5, we're going to have some kind of interesting conversations, I think. I mean, if it doesn't work, no matter who it is, if Clemson goes and gets a portal quarterback and they go 7-5, people are going to be pissed. If Clemson hired the best offensive coordinator out there that money can buy and they go 7-5, people are going to be pissed. It doesn't really matter. If you get to 7-5, it doesn't matter how you get there. But I think for the offseason conversation, I do think not going to the portal for a quarterback cranks up the heat because I think fans don't feel warm and fuzzy about that. So
fans
that's
feel
what
like
I would
you
say
have not
guy.
Done everything that you can do to win.
That's right.
Yeah, so you're putting a lot of eggs in one basket if you don't.
That's correct. Now, a texter brings up a good point from the 843. Says this, all four teams left have transfer quarterbacks. We talked about that the majority of teams in the playoff were transfers, transfer quarterbacks. And in almost every game, in fact, I'll ask you, Ben, because there's one game that I'm not really sure about. I'll start with the games from yesterday. Transfer quarterback Dante Moore outplayed homegrown recruited quarterback Baron Morton. No question. Moore was better than Morton. That was a big reason why Oregon blew out Texas Tech. Transfer quarterback Fernando Mendoza dramatically outplayed homegrown, matured and developed Ty Simpson. No question about it. Transfer quarterback from D2, Trinidad Chambliss, who was playing at Ferris State last year, outplayed, homegrown, developed, recruited as a freshman, Gunnar Stockton, and got them to the semifinals. In those three instances, you had homegrown quarterbacks that were outplayed, who had been in the system for years and the program for years. They were outplayed by transfer quarterbacks. And that, while not the only reason that those results happened, that aspect of it is just unmistakable to me.
Yeah, but at the same time, it does not mean that transfer quarterback is always going to be better. It just means that they're not necessarily going to be worse.
That's a great way to frame it. Yeah,
because I don't, you know, if Deshaun Watson was playing at Clemson his junior year and going up against a transfer quarterback, chances are he would have been better, no matter who that transfer would have been. You know, it's like it's still a talent thing, but to me, like I say, what I take from that is it doesn't mean that you can't compete, because you certainly can. And in the case of Chambliss, I heard Faxon refer to him as a unicorn this morning. I could not agree more. I mean, that's the once in a generation sort of find right there. I mean, is it not?
Yes. The way his second half performance, again, I missed the second half live. I had to go back and watch it this morning. In the second half, this is Ole Miss's passing stats. Okay?
Yeah, and why you look, is his path not a little bit like Ja Morant in basketball?
Yeah.
I mean, just that the guy that nobody makes an offer to, and he turns out to be just this all-world guy. I mean, those just – every now and then you have that unicorn. Like, if ever there's a unicorn, that's him. That's – Faxon said it perfectly.
And you sort of wonder, like, how did you not? Because it's not like he's 5'9". It's not, you know, it's not Diego Pavia where you look at him and you go, well, we know why people missed on this guy. You should have offered him, but we know your hesitations, okay? I don't know what the hesitations were about Trinidad Chambliss. The guy looks the part so much that you just wonder how he falls to D2.
So I wondered the same thing, to the point I tried to find high school film on him and could not. I thought he had to have some talent then, unless he has developed faster than any player in history in the last 2 years. But apparently he has. I mean, he was when you don't even really have huddle film on him, you're not very good.
You know, and I said he outplayed Gunnar Stockton. I thought Gunnar Stockton made some tough plays. But just like down-to-down, throwing the ball, I felt like Stockton was a little erratic. And Chambliss, like the pass from the 30, like the guy shouldn't have been open behind the defense. But like he's putting it on the back shoulder to put him up 10. The coverage is right there. He's putting the ball on the button. I mean, just dialing up Georgia's defense.
He made some incredible passes. There one late, he rolls to his right, and it's about a 25 yard in between defenders. I mean, elite pass. I thought Gunnar Stockton was very good.
I did too.
I didn't think he had a whole lot of help from his wide receivers, actually.
And you know,
and Ole Miss defended very well on the back end.
I thought Julian Sain. And that's the reason I didn't say Sain and Beck, and we'll go to break on this, because I'm not sure that Beck outplayed Sain down to down. I just think Sain made the one catastrophic mistake, and his O-line couldn't block. He took 5 sacks, and I don't remember any of those sacks where I thought, got to get rid of it. It was like, well, folded. I mean, the pocket's gone.
We got to go to break. One other common thing in most of these teams, and I am as sold as I've ever been, that you have to have a running game.
100%. I mean,
like Miami, they leaned on them in the end. Ole Miss, they leaned on them in the end. You have to have a running game. And you saw Georgia's offense sputter when Frazier gets hurt.
Great point. I'm going to talk about that when we come back. 654 Roars the number. This hour brought to you by our friends at Arthrex. Arthrex. Careers.arthrex.com. They are doing phenomenal work in Sandy Springs, Pendleton area, putting everybody from weekend warriors to professional athletes back in the game. That's what Arthrex does better than anybody. They're tip of the spear in terms of technology. I'm telling you right now, there is no better place to work. There's no better culture to be a part of than Arthrex. These folks get the job done. Any upstate, they're doing it right here in the local area. If you want a career change in 2026, you want to be a part of a winning culture, you want to get great benefits, great amenities, a great campus there on Clemson Boulevard in Sandy Springs, Pendleton, Arthrex is a place for you. Go to careers.arthrex.com. Stay with us. Hour two of the program continues right after this.
60 years. That's how long Joe Roberson and son have been roofing homes and businesses right here in the upstate. For generations, they've protected families, local businesses, and landmarks you pass every day. Look around. There's a good chance the roof over your favorite restaurant, your neighbor's home, or even the building you're driving by is a Joe Roberson and Son roof. Why have families trusted them for 6 decades? Because this is a family business built on honest workmanship, fair pricing, and doing the job right every single time. And with Joe Roberson and Son, you don't pay a dime until the job is completed to your satisfaction. If you need roofing service or a new roof, trust the family that Upstate families have trusted for 60 years. Make it a Joe Roberson and Son roof. Call 864-246-0886. That's 864-246-0886. Or visit robersonroofing.net.
At Certified Diesel, we value keeping your diesel truck running smoothly and efficiently. Located at 2209 Highway 292 in Inman, South Carolina, we specialize in light-duty diesel truck repairs and maintenance. Whether you drive a Powerstroke, Cummins, or Duramax, our expert technicians have you covered. Avoid the hassle of dealership maintenance and choose us for all your diesel needs. Call and visit us today at 864-345-4568 or check out our services online at CertifiedDieselLLC.com.
I'm Ryan Beasley. My office works with clients in all areas of state and federal criminal defense to include pre-arrest investigations, white-collar defense, as well as student conduct issues at colleges and universities. Our team works in courts across the state to include city court, magistrate court, state court, and federal court. Our responsive and proactive approach in all cases is relationship-driven, client-centric, and resolution-focused. We look forward to the opportunity to work with you. Please give us a call at 864-679-7777 or find us on the web at www.ryanbeasleylaw.com.
All over Greenville, people are asking, what's a Vermeer? Well, Vermeer is one of Greenville's newest corporate citizens. The company builds vacuum excavation equipment that's changing underground utility construction. Vermeer machines are leading the way in soft dig trenchless innovation, enabling the exposure of underground utility lines without harming them, leaving a softer environmental impact than harsher, more traditional digging methods. Get the scoop at Vermeer.com/dig.
The upstate leader in sports by day, worldwide leader in sports by night. We are the Roar, part of the ESPN family.
Lockheed Martin Armed Forces Bowl taking place. You notice we haven't given you any updates. This game has been on for 40 minutes, and that's because there have been 0 points between 6-6 Texas State and 5-7 Rice.
You know that I am a big supporter of the bowl system. But I'm sorry, bowls after playoff games are just dumb.
I totally agree.
They're just dumb.
And you know what's funny about that? You know what? I'm gonna talk about Toyota Beasley first, because what's funny about that is we're almost to the end of Toyota-thon, and there are still bowls being played. And I want a crescendo to the end. I want a crescendo at New Year's Day. This is the crescendo of Toyota-thon, and there are great financing deals and great payment deals and great cash deals on new and pre-owned Toyotas at Toyota Beasley. All you got to do is go there, ask some questions, deal with their service, their sales staff, deal with their service department, deal with ownership. Ryan and the folks are on site daily. They know how to get the job done for you. They've been serving Beasley for decades. They've been doing it as well as anybody. That's why they've been racking up presence awards the entire time, and that's why they are taking over the entirety of 123. Toyota Beasley, go see them on 123 and ToyotaBeasley.com, where their name means a great deal. I think one of the best ideas, once again, there are things happening right now that they're, like I saw Nick Saban say a thing that said, we got to fix the calendar. And somebody, one of the national reporters, quote tweeted and was like, the calendar exists like it is because coaches wanted all of the things in the calendar. And they just don't like that it's inconvenient for them at times. But if the coaches wanted a different calendar, we would have a different calendar. They just can't figure out what it is that they want. There is no reason in the world why we can't figure out a way to prioritize the climax of the season being the 1st of January. There's no reason that we can't do that. There's no reason that we shouldn't have two bowl games at noon, a semifinal at 4, and a semifinal at 8. And then the championship game a week from whatever the most convenient Monday is. There's no reason. No reason we shouldn't have that at all. But we are going to have significant football later. Back that schedule up, man. Let us play games sooner in August. Back that schedule up. Otherwise, we'd be watching Texas State and Rice at a Christmas gathering instead of on a work day on the 2nd of January after significant playoff games.
You just talked a touchdown into existence as Texas State runs one in. They are up 7-0, literally as you're talking about nobody scoring.
Hey, I'm a big fan of overs. Lake Murray Michael says, I ate rice for lunch, so did the Texas State quarterback. I'm shocked that he didn't do the like spoon with the bowl of rice. I think that would be great. Do you think Carson Beck played well for Miami?
I think he played well enough.
Okay.
Yeah.
Like I thought Carson Beck did what Carson Beck needed to do to win that game. But his stat line is terrible. Ben, like, I'm watching that game. I'm going, you know what? Beck's making the right decisions. He's making some good plays. He's not putting his team in jeopardy. He's not throwing a ball. 138 yards on 19 of 26 is brutally bad. That is brutally bad. But to your point, run game. Now, I will point out that, and look, Garrett Riley has gotten criticism from me all year. If you wanted to run the ball, there's reason to believe you could have or should have. You mentioned that Miami leaned on its run game late. Do you know that Ohio, it's so similar to the Clemson-Penn State conversation. If you take out sacks, Ohio State averaged 4.6 yards per carry, and Miami averaged 4.5 yards per carry. And I know that Ohio State was down some, but they were never down more than 14 in the game. And when they sort of were coming back in the game, it felt like, you know, we could take the air out of the ball a little bit. Like, it's 14-7. It's 17-7, 17-14. We get the ball. We're good. It felt like there were opportunities for them to establish the run. They didn't take them.
Meanwhile, Miami on it's 17-14. They get the ball there in the fourth quarter. 19-yard run, 4-yard run, 3-yard run, 5-yard pass, 13-yard run, 1-yard run, 5-yard run, 13-yard pass, 2-yard run, 5-yard touchdown run.
Yep.
And that was the game.
That was it. And the game was over at that point, like you said. Look, their lines of scrimmage did wear down Ohio State. They had superior lines of scrimmage, which we thought would be a factor in the game. But, for example, one of the reasons I thought Indiana was covering, and I gave that out many times, I put it in the doc yesterday, was that Alabama can't run the ball. They can't run the ball when Jam Miller's healthy. They certainly are not going to run the ball when Jam Miller doesn't play. Their leading rusher was Ty Simpson yesterday. They had 17 carries for 23 yards, and if you take sacks, they averaged 3.4 yards a carry. Indiana ran for 215 yards, including sacks, which you pointed out. Two of those three sacks came on the first three plays of the game.
Mm-hmm.
So the entire rest of the game, what is that? What, they were on 66 plays? So the entire rest of the 63 plays, they were sacked one time. It was just a bruising effort running the ball for 215 on 50 carries. That was one where, like, Alabama couldn't run it, Indiana could run it, game over.
Back on Carson Beck for a moment. Texter says, Carson Beck is Trent Dilfer. Just hand it off, complete a pass or two, and don't screw it up for the defense. You know, I don't know about the comparison, but the point's valid.
I mean, there are matchups that are dicey for Miami in the game. But, again, you're calling the game differently if you know that we're winning the line of scrimmage. Like, I really think that Oregon knew they were going to win the defensive line of scrimmage against Texas Tech's offensive line. And so they called the game differently than they might otherwise have done it. Oregon went for it 8 times on 4th down in that game yesterday. 8.
Mm.
And Texas Tech stopped them 4 times. But Oregon knew they were going to get the ball immediately right back because they knew they were going to win the line of scrimmage. And to me, Miami, one of the things about Mario Cristobal, the criticism of Cristobal, the game management stuff, Mario Cristobal was in a tight game really throughout. Even at 14-0, his offense wasn't doing much. But you felt like Cristobal did not overly complicate the game. It was the kind of close game that Mario Cristobal was very comfortable playing. And I think it was the kind of close game, if we're being honest, that Ryan Day was not comfortable playing. I don't think Ryan Day is comfortable in a line of scrimmage close game. I think Ryan Day would like for close games to be played outside the hashes. And, you know, maybe if you've got Travion Henderson, maybe like that. But I did feel like I've never been quite as critical of Mario Cristobal as many. And I did think that one of the big wins for Miami is that Cristobal really did not screw this game up in a way that people are saying, you know, Pete Golding really botched the first half and Kirby Smart really botched the end of game yesterday. We're talking about other coaches not using the clock very well and not using timeouts well and things like that. And nobody has said a word about Mario Cristobal doing that.
No, you're right. And Cristobal's been really bad at it. I've not ever been a big fan. But
back to Oregon, by the way. He's bad at Oregon.
But he was really good in this game. He was. And again, I don't know how many opportunities he had to really mess it up, but it feels like he's a lot more cerebral during the games now than he used to be.
I think it helps if you do. I mean, he's got playmakers at receiver better than he's had. He's got an older quarterback. I don't know how trustworthy Carson Beck. He still just looks dumb. Like I don't know that I'm trusting Carson Beck to just make all the right choices. But he also loves. He's an offensive line coach,
and I love the way that he has constructed this roster. And he makes no bones about it. It's an inside out construction. He started on the line of scrimmage. He started with the offensive line. He started where he was comfortable, and it is paying off. And it is a lot easier to recruit running backs and everything else when you've got a solid offensive line to point to.
I'm going to see. How many – Ohio State have 4 tackles for loss in a game? 63 plays for Miami, 4 tackles for loss, 2 sacks for 5 yards. Even when they were losing yards, Ben, they were not in 2nd and 18. That, again, if you want to grind out possessions and you want to run the ball habitually, never being in 2nd and 15 is a really good place to be. And by the way, again, something – and I should have tweeted it because I saw it yesterday and I thought this is amazing, but it was when other games are going on. 0 penalties for Miami.
They typically have had penalties during pregame warm-up.
Yes! They're not stomping on logos and trying to fight everybody and getting 15-yard penalties on the opening kickoff. 0 penalties. I just think Mario Cristobal deserves a lot of credit because of some of the things that he's been accused of in the past that could have really self-destructed Miami in this game, and they did not.
Speaking of 0 penalties, you've noticed how few flags were thrown in all of these games?
Yes.
There's certainly been a directive passed down, right, to let them play?
Oh, yeah.
And, boy, they have let them play.
The one critical flag, like the Georgia fans are mad at the targeting yesterday, which I thought by the letter of the law, I thought it was targeting. And I think Ole Miss fans were upset with one of the pass interferences late, but I felt like it was pass interference.
Yeah, I did. I don't know what targeting is, but I didn't think that was targeting. And then they missed the horrible, horrible
face mask.
Oh, my gosh.
Man, that was blatant. That was obvious. I've watched the end of the game. I've one more question on the Georgia Ole Miss game for you, just from a game management standpoint since we're on it. What did you think of the decision on 3rd and goal to throw the ball and then they throw an incomplete pass and they leave Ole Miss a minute? What would your idea have been in that situation?
Not to throw the ball. But again, Frazier was out. I mean, I thought they actually handled it well up until then. It's kind of no man's land, though, is it not?
Yes.
I mean, with that, the time on the clock there.
Because I'm thinking, because Ole Miss uses their last timeout with 1:04. It's 3rd and goal at the 6.
Mm-hmm.
They had just run it and lost 3.
Well, and I was just thinking, what difference would that have made in the clock? When you're going to kick it anyway. You get 30 seconds.
If Stockton pulls it down and runs instead of throwing the ball, even if he gets tackled at the line of scrimmage or back behind, whatever, like you roll him to the middle of the field. If it's not there, just fall down. Like you could tell him stuff like that.
And Ole Miss had already used their last time out, right?
Yes.
Yeah, so you could have shaved 30 seconds off.
So the play ended at 59. If you use that as your baseline, Georgia still had all three timeouts. So you could let the clock go all the way down to one and call timeout. That means there's 20 seconds left. You kick the field goal and there's 17, 16 seconds. You kick it off, maybe you squib kick it. Ole Miss has two plays. They're basically going to kneel it out and go to overtime. You're going to play overtime. Mm-hmm. But I was actually texting a buddy of mine, and I'm with him. That's how you have to play it. But you almost can't even be mad at Stockton, even though he didn't have a great game throwing the ball. He's trying to win the game. Like, if you throw that touchdown pass, you're putting your defense out on the field, first and 10 to 25. Ole Miss has no timeouts in less than a minute, and they have to score a touchdown to win the game if you complete that pass. I'm in a playoff game. I'm almost not even that mad for Gunnar Stockton just trying to throw a pass to win the game, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Like, from a clock management standpoint, you'd like to run it all down. But if the alternative is we gave ourselves a chance to win the game, would you rather have done it the first way? Yes. But I don't mind that you've got a quarterback that's trying to go win the game. I just